This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. Simulcast on the Team 980 in Richmond. Check us out on 910 The Fan. And we're streaming live on the Odyssey app, wherever you may be. NBC Sports Washington is the TV home. We're presented by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. Looking to be their next five-star HVAC technician or plumber, just visit cropmetcalf.com to join their team. I'm John Paul Flame, joined by Eric Bickle, Johnny Cake Sawville, and Jason Bishop. Joining us right now to talk some Washington Nationals on the BetQL guest hotline is Jesse Dougherty, covers the Nats for the Washington Post, wrote an excellent article about Steven Strasburg. And Jesse, it was very informative. I left feeling quite depressed about it and feeling bad for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a happy article, that's for sure.
No, it's not a pick-me-up.
No, it's a good way to start the week. You know, it's really happy stuff. But no, I mean, yeah, the outlook's not good. I mean, as I unpacked in the story, he's shut down from all physical activity again, which, you know, as of mid-April, he was trying to get going again and see if he could make a push, and it just didn't happen. And, you know, you do start to wonder how many pushes he has left, if any, and that's kind of the state of play for him right now.
In spring training, was he around the team? Because you note that he wasn't there for opening day and hasn't been around the team. And I remember hearing
Mike said
that
he was
doing workouts.
I used to ask him.
Yeah, so he wasn't in West Palm during spring training. As of early April, he was trying to work out. He would come to Nationals Park early in the morning when they were on the road. He would work out at a Nova facility in Northern Virginia. And then on the, you know, in the last week of April is when even the lower body exercises he was doing to try and ramp up and try and just keep his legs going started to irritate his right side and irritate the nerve damage that he's dealing with. So yeah, as of like, you know, that month he was attempting to do things, but he hasn't in the last, you know, 6 or so weeks.
Can you remind people, I don't know if you know this off the top of your head, but like how many people have had this procedure and successfully come back to the majors? Isn't it like only like one or two guys and not very successfully?
Yeah. So it's kind of like a sliding scale. So like, I don't have the exact number, but I've done a good bit of research on this. And like what happens is, there's a lot of factors. Like the earlier you have it, the better, right? Because like a major factor in recovery is previous wear and tear on your arm. So like the actual surgery itself is invasive and tough and can be difficult to come back from. But what's even harder to come back from is if you've already had Tommy John surgery, labrum surgery, you know, back elbow surgeries, whatever it may be. So what we know about Steven Strasburg, obviously, is he did not go into the TOS surgery with a fresh arm or a fresh shoulder or a fresh neck area. He goes in with a lot of history where I'll use an example that's close to home right now. Like Cole Hemry is a Nationals top pitching prospect, had TOS surgery last August and had never been operated on before for his arm. And he is, you know, who knows what happens in his career, prospects, health, whatever, but he's throwing 95. He's getting back to he's already back on the mound in affiliated baseball. So that's a major difference. So, you know, Matt Harvey's held up as the guy who couldn't make it back. I mean, again, older when he had it. Kenny Rogers was kind of the first name in, you know, back in like the early 2000s who had it, but he got it as sort of this last ditch attempt to pitch at 37. So then he's not going to make it back. So it's kind of known as this surgery that's been like, if all else fails, go to this. And if you're already a guy who's doing the thing to that because all else has failed, you're already not in a good position to come back anyway. So I think that's the major factor is age, arm history. Chris Archer is a pitcher in recent years who came back and was like serviceable for the Twins after he had it. He's not what he once was, but he's pitching. Merrill Kelly on the Diamondbacks is a serviceable starter in their rotation after having it in his 20s. So
he's been really good. Merrill Kelly's been really good.
Right. Yeah. So that's just an example of like, you know, guys can pitch again, but it's but age factors and injury history are probably the biggest factors in recovery, not just the surgery and how it goes.
Jesse, how much are the Nats, I mean, in hindsight's 2020, but how much are they kicking themselves for not getting insurance on that massive deal? Like, they have to look at that now and be like, well, what were we thinking here?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's tricky because, like, some teams, like, insure contracts as a matter of course. Nationals never have. Like, the Scherzer contract, the Zimmerman contract, Stevens' first contract, none of these were insured. So it's never, something they have not done as part of their contract structure. In this case, like, I put in the story, and I think it's fair to them to say this, like, that would have been a really hard arm to insure. Now, of course, like, if you look hindsight, it's like, whether that's $30 million extra dollars, like, you do that because you want to save the money. Like, at the time, though, that feels like a really big amount, and there's all these sort of, like, caveats in those insurance policies about he has to pitch a certain number of games for it to even activate. So, like, who knows if they even would have touched the money. It's just the reason we reported it, and I think you're right. I mean, obviously, hindsight is 2020, and you'd love to have it. The reason we reported it mostly is because it's such a big question right now in baseball. I think the Carlos Correa situation made fans like acutely aware of insurance and injuries and how contracts work. So more than ever this spring, I've been getting questions like, is it insured? So I went and got the answer. But yeah, it's like, those insurance policies are super wonky, and like finding a partner to insure that arm, because you're saying like, you know, you're going to pay us money if this breaks down. And I think a lot of insurance companies would have said, I don't know about that. And so I think what it speaks to is, and this is a whole different discussion, and I'm just putting it out in the world rather than sharing my opinion, but if you can't insure a contract, or if it's that hard to insure, should you be signing it in the first place, I think is really the question.
Talking to Jesse Docherty, writes for the Washington Post, covers the Nationals. So one thing that struck me about this weekend as they played the Phillies, obviously – a lot of former Nationals. Kyle Schwarber hit a couple home runs. He was with the Nationals. Harper, Turner, all that stuff is. They had about the same record going in. So maybe that says a lot about the Phillies, but let's talk about the Nationals side of it. They've been playing better baseball than we would have expected.
I think at one point, Jesse, I saw a stat in the last few days where they were like 18-16 or something in their last 34, whatever that is, right?
Yeah. They're I don't even want to say overachieving because – I mean, they are relative to expectations, but they're playing decent baseball. I think the main thing is that the starting pitching is a lot better than last season. And that's like, there's a few reasons for that. There's improvements for Josiah Gray, improvements for Patrick Corbin, which have been a revelation. And Trevor Williams is a much more stable back-end starter than Eric Fetty was. And then Mackenzie Gore has been really good in flashes. So you just have all-around better rotation, which changes everything. The defense is better. The offense is, you know, give or take on a given night, can explode, but can go really cold. But when that starting rotation isn't just like lighting the bullpen on fire night after night and just keeping you behind, like it's happened here some games, but if you guys remember last season, it was like second inning exit, first inning exit, third inning exit. I mean, you just can't live that way. It just, that sets you back a week, let alone in the night you're playing in. And I think the starting pitching last season just made it so the Nationals just simply could not compete. That's how you get to 107 losses. You don't get to 107 losses by just purely not hitting. I mean, you can, but it really is if you can't pitch and you don't have a rotation, that's how you get to 107 losses. So I think I wasn't sure if the rotation was going to improve. Like, you can't know if Josiah Gray is going to take that step. You can't know what Mackenzie Gore is after missing all the second half last year. And then Patrick Corbin, too, is like always kind of been a question mark in the last few seasons. So the fact that it has just been a major difference in watching them. Aesthetically, they're just such a better team to watch this season. And then the results, like, that keeps you in games. And they've competed. They've come back some. They've lost a lot of games with their bullpen in late innings. So, like, that record, in theory, could be even better with some, you know, with some meltdowns avoided. So, it's really been a major difference. But I know I probably sound like Mike Rizzo right now, but like starting pitching is the reason for that. I mean, it really is, and that's why they've improved so much.
Right, and on the flip side, the Phillies are bad because their starting pitching has been really bad. Zach Wheeler has sucked. Tywan Walker has sucked. Trey Turner's hitting 235. You know, Schwarber's hitting bombs, but he's hitting 175. And I read online the Philly papers, and they're killing them because some of these guys just aren't earning what they're getting paid for, including Turner.
Yeah, I mean, this might come back to bite me because of what they did last year. But, like,
right.
putting the series aside, like, look, you took two or three from the Nationals, which you should. You probably, the way you've spent money and built that team, you should sweep the Nationals, really. That team just does not move me at all. It just doesn't. Like, if the top two starters are not going like they were in last year's playoffs, which is a big ask to be going that well, I just don't see, like, a lot of lineup balance. They don't defend that well.
Right.
The bullpen's uninspired. I mean, there's some guys in the back end of the bullpen that are good if they can get them a lead, and I get that. But middle relievers are just pitching a lot of contact. I just don't really see it. Like, watching them this weekend, like, I just was not moved at all.
Hey, so you were talking about defense. C.J. Abrams, I think, is up to 12 errors. The throw that he had, I can't remember what game it was, where it was an unassisted double play. He tagged second, and he threw the ball. You remember it.
Friday
night. He threw the ball like 30 feet left of Dominic Smith. I think he was playing first. I mean, what is going on with – I like C.J. I do. But, man, he's got to get more consistent defensively.
No, he does. And I think, like, that play, too, is like – a good distillation of what he is, right? Like he makes a pretty athletic play, gets to the bag, he's fast, and then like, whoop, you know, and that's like a rookie shortstop, I think. I mean, you're putting a guy who like barely had played in the minors before last August when he came up because of the COVID year, because of injuries, because of when he was drafted. You're putting him in the most premier defensive position in the sport. And there's going to be so many eyeballs on him at shortstop and every mistake, like, it doesn't feel that way at second for some reason, or at third base. But like when you make mistakes at shortstop, like, and I do it too, like, we all see that, you know, and it feels really, really bad because that's supposed to be a position you have locked down that is the most sure-handed guy on the team. So I think it's growing pains. Like, I don't think this is him for his career. At the plate too, like, he'll hit a 450-foot homer to right field, and you're like, oh my gosh. And then the next five at-bats look totally uncompetitive. And, you know, he's flailing, it falls in the dirt, and he's, you know, three or four pitches and he's out. And I think it's just kind of like the C.J. Abrams experience right now. To me, it's been more good than bad solely because of his age and experience. Like, I take more good from it, but like, it can be a tough watch at times, and it can be sort of like, it can be like, oh, is this guy going to come around? And I think that's just what it looks like to have a guy who like probably should be like on the AAA majors cusp right now, given sort of his specs. Like, I think it's just like watching all that growth happen in the major leagues is going to lead to that.
So I'm sure you saw this, but James Wood in the five games against Bowie here over the weekend, he started off 0-for-9, but then his last three games, he hit two bombs. He went 3-for-5 yesterday. So he's obviously one of the Nats' top prospects. Do you think that, I don't think it's going to be him, but can you give us a couple names you think might be called up from the minors, I don't know, in July, after some sort of a deadline, maybe September? Can you give us a couple names you think might be some of the younger players we might see later in the season?
Yeah. I think a major consideration there and an instructive case is like Corbin Carroll, who's visiting this week with the Diamondbacks last season, is if teams bring them up after a certain deadline, which is like 45 days left in the season, and then beyond that, they still maintain rookie eligibility for the next season. Mm-hmm. And that's now important because aside from all the service time discussions people have, it's also you can get draft pick compensation from guys if they finish, you know, in the top two, top three of rookie of the year voting, Cy Young voting, all that. So there are incentives now in the draft to bring guys up, but also just like kind of make sure they maintain their eligibility. So I would say like you'd be looking at sort of a September, late August call up for any one of these players that could potentially be in that bucket. And that applies to top 100 prospects. So the two obvious names are outfielders James Wood and Robert Hassel III. And the reason why they're the obvious ones are not just because of the skill level and because they're in AA, but also because like if you look at the deadline and players in Nationals can move, like Corey Dickerson's a candidate. Frankly, I think Lane Thomas could be a candidate. I don't have that like reported out that they're shopping him or fielding offers or anything, but he's hit really well, and I think it could be a situation where you see some other fourth outfielder types in your system and don't need to keep him around for the next 3-4 years. So if you're thinking about that there's potential movement in the corner outfield spots, then those guys make a lot of sense. And they are sort of the top guys that are closest to the majors where some of the other big names like Brady House, like Elijah Green, are farther down the lower levels and not you know, a phone call away. Right. We've seen a lot of guys jump from double A. I do think that with both those players, if they hit really well and if James Wood continues on this pace, like, they'll get him triple A at bats because there's no rush right now. Mm-hmm. Like, Soto made that jump because Howie Kendrick got hurt. That team was trying to compete. They needed an outfielder in that moment. This team won't ever have like a rush scramble player to the majors. Like, the development timeline will be very methodical, and this can be prescribed and not sort of accelerated by any outside factors. So wow. I would guess both those guys, you know, make a pit stop in AAA at some point, whether it's before coming up at the end of this year, next year. But, you know, I also think, like, for Mike Rizzo and for the front office and for the coaching staff, they're all in contract years. And I think there's something to be said for showing ownership, sort of the guys you got in these trades. It's one thing to be hitting in Bowie, and that's great, but it's another thing to be hitting in the show. You know, if you're a young player that came back in this blockbuster trade, you kind of put yourself on the line with. So I do think that might factor in too. And that's just human nature to say, like, we want to show everyone what we did here and bring up some guys that maybe are ready. So I'm not saying it's definitely September, but I think that all those factors should be considered.
Jesse, we've spent a lot of time on this show talking about the sale of the Commanders. But before we even got to the sale of the Commanders, the Nationals were supposed to be sold. Whatever happened to that?
They got some good cover locally in terms of the Commander sale being a whole thing, right? Everyone kind of forgot. Yeah. I think pretty simple, like, lack of the offer you want. So you hold on and see if it will clear up down the road. I mean, we'll report this till our faces are blue and we're going to have to keep doing it. But the Madsen situation is a major roadblock. I think not seeing a necessary end in sight for that, or a sort of easy path to a buyout or a change there for a potential owner is a huge, you know, factor. I mean, it's media rights and TV or how you make your money right now. And that's, you know, we've seen with the whole Sinclair situation in Bally's, it's like, it's a whole mess there. And the future of TV and baseball and TV is so murky, but like, to go into a situation where you just have no control and the team up the road is pulling all the strings and has obviously proven across the last, you know, 15 years or so, whatever, plus that they're not going to play nicely. You know, that's, like, if I'm shopping for an MLB franchise, like, why pick that one when there are potentially other ones coming up in the future that don't have that problem, right? Or, frankly, the one up the road is going to be available at some point, and I'm a local guy who wants to own a baseball team, and that team controls all the media rights. So I think, like, it's pretty easy to see why the Nationals maybe didn't get their price. Also, knowing the Lerner family, like, they set their price high, and they wait to get it. There's a reason why Nationals Park is still called Nationals Park. Most teams in baseball get money for their naming rights, and we don't see a lot of non-brand name stadium names anymore. So I think thinking about their negotiating tactics in the ways we can see the fact there's no stadium name. We can see the fact that there's no jersey patch on the Nationals uniform. We know that they like getting their price, and that's their negotiating style. They don't cave to that. So then now thinking about them trying to sell a whole franchise, I think it's easy to see why, you know, they haven't gotten their price, and they've held pat on. They've held pat on a lot of things over the years. So I think it's sort of if you would want the team to be sold, it's the wrong combination of negotiators, situation, TV rights deal, etc. And if you are someone who hopes that the Lerners make as much money as they possibly can, then it's the right combination of those things, because they're probably holding out for a better deal that may or may not come. So that's sort of the state of play with it. But yeah, it's kind of just faded into a non-story, which is very weird, which frankly is a story.
All right, Jesse, good stuff. That's Jesse Dougherty, covers the Nationals for the Washington Post. Thanks for joining us.
Appreciate it, guys. Yep. Thank you.
Thanks, Jesse.
Yeah, I mean, with the Commander sale, you just forgot that the Nats are up for sale, but right. I guess maybe they're not really for sale right now.
Well, it makes a good point about the fact that they haven't named the stadium and they haven't, you know, sold a jersey patch. Maybe the price is just too high for others to meet at this point.
Coming up next is Chase Young's absence at the OTAs ruffling some feathers.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Chucky's on 106.7 The Fan. Commanders have mandatory minicamps starting tomorrow.
Yep.
This is like the last thing before training camp.
Mm-hmm.
So they've had these voluntary OTAs. They'll have mandatory minicamp Tuesday through Thursday. And then it's shut down until August.
End of July, yeah.
Or end of July. Yeah. I don't know the exact date that they start training camp.
They come together.
But they get a good 6 to 8 weeks off after these mandatory minicamps. And that's when guys will go on vacations. I heard some people saying where they're going and going to Hawaii, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Jermon Bushrod is a guy who played college football, Towson.
He did, yes.
Tiger Pride. Kicks.
Tiger Pride.
And then he played 12 seasons in the NFL, 7 for the Saints, was a starting left tackle. He went on with Grant and Danny on Friday and had some interesting comments about Chase Young and how the team may be feeling about Chase, who skipped out on the voluntary OTAs.
I think that some of his some of the guys on the defensive side of the ball, I'm pretty sure have tried to communicate that with him and let him understand the type of message that it sends, again, not just to the players but to the front office. Are you all in? Do you want to be a commander? Like, what are you trying to do? Are you all in with this team? So, if he is away from OTAs right now and he comes back stronger and he has a really good year, then this conversation, doesn't really matter.
Let me ask you that. If you're his teammate and he comes back, he has an awesome camp, preseason, whatever, but like 2.5 sacks in week one, 5 sacks in the first 4 games, you don't care anymore that he wasn't there.
Because
right?
At the end of the day, it's about what are you doing in practice? How are you making yourself better? How are you making the team better? And when it's time to strap it up on game day, are you being productive and are you being available? That's all that matters. So if he's not at OTAs and he's not available and he's not getting the production, the message is loud and clear, in my opinion.
Would a teammate ever get involved in someone else's business to say, hey, man, where are you? Or does that not really happen?
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure some of the older guys are just, are reaching out just to make sure that, one, he's okay as a player, because at the end of the day, we care about, each other, and we understand the type of stress physically, mentally, and emotionally that comes with playing the game of professional football. So it's, I guess we really got to wait to training camp to really give our full judgment and our full opinion, because then you'll see if the actions that he took right now actually paid off.
Again, we've had this argument for weeks now. If he balls out, he has 12 sacks, everyone will be fine. Mm-hmm. But if he doesn't, it's going to be another thing that people point to. Not a great look, in my opinion. But he could be getting bad advice, too. Or maybe it's good advice. What do I know? Maybe it's good advice. Maybe the advice is, hey, don't go out there and, get a non-contact injury in a contract year.
I'm sure that's a lot probably of people, part of it. But in the immediate, he'll be there tomorrow.
I would think he would be.
I see a lot of people on social media that want to defend Chase Young, and that's fine. But what I would say to all of them is he has to produce.
If he doesn't produce, all of your arguments,
you can throw them out. We understand. We all understand the meaning of the word voluntary. But if he does not produce, this is going to be a knock against him. If he produces, just like Bushrod said, then the guys are going to be like, cool, you're sacking quarterbacks.
Right.
It's all good. Do whatever you want as long as you sack quarterbacks and help our team win.
Mm-hmm. But what we know about him and the fact that he's not showing up for some of these tells me it's going to be hard for him to produce.
Well,
you know what
his
I mean?
Argument is,
because he's not all in mentally and he's not out there battling it with the guys and going against their offensive line. I mean, it's going to be harder for him to just come out and just produce right away, I think.
His argument is, though, and I think it came out this weekend, that he's at Von Miller's and he's working out with him. And he's doing what Von Miller does in the offseason.
Well, that hadn't happened. Then he do what Von Miller does in the regular season.
I was going to say that hasn't happened yet.
And have impacts on games.
He hasn't turned into a Von Miller.
To me, that's more important than him working out with Von Miller. I don't really care that he's working out with Von Miller.
I agree. Like, he's done that in years past.
How about you have 12 or 15 sacks in a season? That's why this team drafted you number two overall.
Right.
They didn't draft you to have 7.5 sacks and everybody to fawn over you because you had a decent rookie year. And you were the defensive rookie of the year in a down year in the NFL, when I guess other guys that were coming into the league when you didn't put up great numbers.
The only thing I would say to the people that defend Chase regardless, and it's a small minority, but there are definitely people out there, is that what makes you think, let's say all things being equal, what makes you think Chase is going to do anything this year? He's had 1.5 sacks his last 13 games. 10 of those, he was healthy. It was pre-injury. At 1.5. Like, why do you think all of a sudden, you think he just figured it out? And he had 7.5 in his great year. The year that everyone is saying, oh, it was rookie of the year, went to the Pro Bowl. He had 7.5 sacks. Slow your roll. Not that great.
That looks that looks worse now, but at the time we thought it was really good.
Understood, but let's look at it from a global perspective from 3 years later.
It doesn't look that
7.5 sacks. That's his great year. You're riding a horse that ain't that great right now. Let's call it what it is.
I don't know why anybody thinks
he's going to have a breakout year.
That's what I'm saying. I just think it's going to be harder for him to do that if he's not showing you that he's willing to put in the work off season.
His argument is he is pulling. It's not a matter of
I know
willing.
He's saying that, but we've heard that before, and he goes out there and doesn't do anything.
Right. But I'm not accusing Chase of not working out. Not trying to get physically ready. But I am accusing Chase of not being all in with the guys.
Yes.
That's what I would say.
Maybe, also, he could be one of these guys we've heard other athletes talk about over the years, and we've heard this from more than one athlete, that some guys play football because they're good at football and don't truly love football. Mm. Maybe Chase
Great
Young
point.
Is just, maybe he's really, he's been really good at football his whole life. Maybe he doesn't deep down love playing football. Maybe he likes the trappings come with it, the fame, the money, the success, all of that. Maybe he's not wired to be all the time, all the time. And I'm not saying that that is what he is. I'm saying maybe that's what that could be in play here.
Strong possibility of that.
That could be part of his makeup. I don't know. I don't know the guy personally.
And I think the coaches and the team, especially the defensive line, they know. They know if he's wired that way.
They know who loves football, who doesn't.
Yeah, but I'm saying they probably know. Right. If that's the way he is, they probably know
that. And I think it's a lot more common than you think.
I'm sure.
A lot more common.
Some guys like Jonathan Allen, that dude loves football and is all football all the time. Maybe Chase just is not wired that way. Maybe he just doesn't have that same sort of inner burning passion to play football. He just plays football because he's been really good at it up to this point.
Right. All right, let's go to, let me see here. Let's go to PJ in Reston. PJ, what's up, buddy? You're on with the Junkies. How are you, my friend?
Hey, good morning, everybody. Hope everybody had a great, great weekend and everything.
You too.
I'm going to take the position here where I personally, if I was in Chase Young's position, I would never, if I'm in it's my fourth year and I know how the NFL is, there's no guaranteed contracts. I'm confused by the narrative of, you know, if he's not there, then that means he's not mentally, whether he's mentally in or mentally not, from a logic point of view, it really makes no sense for him. Look at what happened to tight end Amani Rodgers. Sean Lee, I think, two different years in voluntary minicamp. Sean Merriman. There's a huge list of guys that have really gotten really bad injuries in his voluntary minicamps. And the thing is this, regardless of whether he's going to have, because then people say, well, you know, he has to produce. But that's a completely separate argument. I agree he has to produce. But it just makes no sense with the way it's structured. Unless contracts are guaranteed, why would you go there for, you know, a couple days in early May where you can tear a knee, you can have an injury, then you're gone? All these people on the Washington coaching staff or fans, media, national, local, that are complaining about him not going there, none of them would give $20 million to him if he injures his knee. So why, now whether he's mentally in or mentally, that's a completely separate argument, right? I hope he's mentally in there. Maybe he really is working out with Von Miller. But the way the NFL is structured, it's surprising to me every year. It's been like 7-8 years now why this happens all over the country with different teams when it makes no logical sense to actually show up for this. Now, when the voluntary starts, that's different, right? But well, it just makes no sense.
Well, I would say that, and maybe that is part of it, PJ. But like you said, there is mandatory starting tomorrow, so you're in the same situation. So he's got to be there tomorrow.
He needs to be there. The mandatory tomorrow, he needs to be there.
But he did this. He did this to himself. If he was producing, you know, he got hurt, so he really couldn't control that. But if he was producing when he was healthy, then everyone would say, "All right, I understand why he's not there. He's going to get a bigger contract." But the fact that he wasn't producing, that's why you question it.
But especially if you're not producing, that means you even more should skip it, because at least if you're producing, you got injured. There's a little bit more history to say, okay, we can pay this guy. Like if he had three great good years and he got injured this year in voluntaries, we would still pay him because we saw three good years. But actually, to me, it's kind of like a point in the opposite way, because especially because he's not producing, that's why he has to even more protect himself to give himself that 1 year to have production. You
maybe
know what I mean?
I mean, I think if you're on an expiring contract, I understand why guys might stay away from extra stuff. Yeah. I do get it. But here's my question for you, PJ, and then we'll let you go. Do you expect Chase to have a big year? And if so, why?
I expect him to have a medium year. I don't expect him to have one sack. I don't expect him to have 13 or 14 sacks. I expect him to have about 8 sacks and be really good against the rush, which a lot of people forget how he's really strong against the rush. So,
will you be pleased if Chase ends the season with 8 sacks? Will you be pleased?
If he's 8 sacks and he plays the rush well, I would be pleased. If he plays the rush well, to go with that.
No, I'm not pleased. It's not good enough. It's...
Thanks, buddy.
But some
from
people
where
are in
drafted,
his corner.
It's just it's not good enough production.
Yeah,
I mean, I was expecting a Hall of Famer. I'm gonna be honest.
I'm expect
you.
Well when you draft.
I was
guy
expecting
that high,
a difference maker.
Double digit sacks every single season.
A beast.
That should be the expectation.
Well, I mean, you draft 2 overall, you should be.
I was expecting someone twice as good as Brian Arakpo. I was expecting someone better than Ryan Kerrigan.
Right.
And Ryan Kerrigan's a stud.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Arakpo was a pretty damn good player.
Right, in hindsight.
And Kerrigan has turned out, Kerrigan was a mid-first round pick, but he's turning out to be 100 times better than Chase Young.
Not even close.
Yeah.
Not right now.
At this point. Yeah.
Maybe Chase can prove me wrong.
How many guys, I mean, I don't know. How many, this is what, his fourth year?
Year 4,
how many guys at the NFL level in year 4, take quarterbacks out, maybe they didn't play well, how many guys in year 4 blossom and become stars? Like literally blossom.
We'd have to go back and look at that.
I don't know. I'm sure there are some.
The average career is 3 years.
I mean, Ryan Kerrigan had 95 and a half sacks in his career. What are the chances Chase Young has 95 sacks in his career?
Right now, zero. Right now, the chances are zero.
It's less than zero.
If you want to chime in, the phone number is 800-636-1067. You can call us on the MGM National Harbor listener lines here on the Junkies.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. Simulcast on the Team 980. Yeah, Drabby handed us a story about, am I cheap for bringing my own lunch to work? And just, my initial thought is no. Some people bring their lunch to work. Some people, you bring stuff all the time. I see you going in the fridge.
I mean, this morning I brought a delicious Chobani yogurt and I threw some trail mix in.
I don't think it's cheap.
Jason brings stuff all the time. I'm too lazy.
Yeah.
And I eat breakfast from the vending machine.
Yeah. I think it's just being smart, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But I think also for some people, you know, it's all relative. Time is money. Do you have the time to do it? You know what I mean? Some people, they don't have the time. They don't, you know, to prepare
stuff. I have
the
time.
We have time.
I have the time to throw.
But some people
are
so busy
they
don't have the time.
I understand if you don't have the time.
I guess I'm just not into it. You're right. I have the time. Everybody has their life leaks. Like for me, I almost go out to lunch every day. Look, even if you go to a fast food joint these days,
that's a life leak.
Or I go to I guess they call them fast casual, whatever. I don't go to restaurants where a waiter comes to
you
see
me. You go to like Cava.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't go there, but I go to places like that, that it adds up. But I also, the way I rationalize it, I spend almost nothing on clothes.
Right. That's your trade-off.
Well, also, when you really do the math on it.
I don't either, really.
I mean, how much is... my life leak is the machines here. Because I get hungry during the show. We get here at 5. I'm here till 10. I get hungry. And I'm too lazy to bring my own stuff. Because it actually does require effort.
It's a little bit of effort, but it's... To me, it's worth it.
It is
because
from a dollars and cents point,
JP's
it's definitely
spending
worth it.
$3 a day minimum on a Kind bar or whatever you're buying from.
It's less than three,
so
but
two or $3
roughly
a day.
Three. I spend probably $15 a week.
Let's say I spend $4 a day, four times five is 20. I'm spending $80 to $100 a month.
Yeah,
but if I spent $15 a week, it's probably cheaper. But how much is the Chobani plus the trail mix? It might be close to $3 I spent.
I bought it at Costco. I'm sure it.
It's cheaper. That's the thing. It's all relative.
My biggest life leak, and it's not a huge one, but I, without fail, if I'm out like at Harris Teeter or Giant, wherever it is, I always have to have either a soda or like a sparkling water, like a cold one on the way out. It's like, it's in my brain. Like if I don't have it, I feel like I'm parched.
That's how I feel.
I'm thirsty and I need that drink.
That's how I feel when I'm eating poorly, and I go to Safeway if I don't get a peppermint patty on the way out.
Oh, those are delicious.
I like to just grab one in the aisle, get a peppermint patty.
My life leak is, but my wife's is definitely. And this, I wasn't visibly upset.
Your life
I kept
leak
it
is the
internal.
Wife.
Okay, yeah.
But we pack the fridge, right? So she'll go out and spend $200
at
Harris Teeter.
I was just going to bring
she
that
packs
up.
The fridge, and then, you know, 3 days later, oh, I got to go back because we need this, this, and this. Well, it's in the back of the fridge.
Right.
Because you're putting all this stuff that's blocking the view of the little
see.
Things.
Yeah.
And now this is a small thing, but my daughter yesterday wanted to make a tomato sandwich.
Okay.
So she brought out the mozzarella
and
said, this is bad.
The mozz had gone bad.
Well, yeah, but there was 75% of the tomato mozz still there, or the mozz still there.
Yeah.
But my wife had just bought another whole thing of mozzarella. I said, well, this is the reason, because it's in the back of the fridge. You can't see it.
Yeah.
So then you think we need more of it. Well, it's in the back of the fridge.
Right.
The milk and the orange juice and
we do worse.
Everything is blocking it.
Yeah.
And we waste so much
no,
food.
No, we waste so much on food.
It gets
every time
on
we
my
go,
last effing nerve.
Every time we go, everyone just gets in ruts, right? So you go, my wife does. She buys broccoli every time, you know, turkey every time, cheese every time, you know, whatever. And
go
then it starts stacking up. And then my youngest always wants to have strawberries, blueberries, blackberries, all the fruits and stuff, pineapple. And then we just throw away so much food.
I know.
Every week.
I know.
It is a It tilts me. Wilted
Eric,
lettuce.
You should have seen all of the strawberries that were in the back of the fridge on the top shelf.
Rotten.
Strawberries are expensive.
Don't you have a container within the fridge?
Yeah, like
that's
a
fruit?
Vegetable crisper?
Yeah, we do, but it was filled.
Doesn't really work.
And we don't always put everything in that drawer. I mean,
there are all these like Instagram hacks, like if you put like, I don't know, vinegar on it or something, like it stays fresher longer.
So what did we do yesterday after I made that complaint? We cleaned out the fridge. I put a bunch of stuff downstairs in the fridge, like drinks.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need all those drinks up in the top shelf.
Oh, I need all the drinks. I need them. Nice and cold, too.
Well, I mean, we go downstairs. That's where they'll be, downstairs. Yeah. But I don't want to get into the to the point where we're just spending so much money on fruits and vegetables and cheeses when we already have it. And
well,
this
I
is going bad. You're
away.
Just you're lighting money on fire.
we throw away like slimy ham every week. Literally every week. Just packages and packages of slimy ham that nobody
ham
ever
ham is borderline slimy the second you buy it.
It
like,
is.
You better eat that like in 2 or 3 days.
And then we just keep buying slimy ham. Keep throwing away slimy ham.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of operation are we running?
You love ham and cheeses. Don't act like
you
don't.
I'm not a huge ham guy.
Really?
I like a big ham from like honey baked ham.
Oh, with the glaze
on
the
edge.
Yeah,
with the honey or whatever they put on it.
Yeah,
that's
a lot of honey and honey baked ham.
But I don't need like sliced ham constantly going bad in my fridge. Constant. Constant.
You know how good a Western omelet is with the diced onions, peppers, and ham?
I'm gonna venture to say that 30% of what we buy, we throw away. I really think it's that high.
I don't think it's that out of the ordinary.
I think it's really that high.
Yeah.
You can't have that.
It's a huge
life. Tighten that
and
up.
I'm probably in the same boat. You can't have that. That's our fault. Me and you. That's our fault.
I just, yeah.
Got to stay on top of it.
I don't know what to do about it.
I think you just have to go through
the
fridge.
Quit buying ham.
No, you got to go through the fridge and see what's in the back of the fridge.
You need to do multiple grocery store trips. You're trying to just get everything in one swoop.
Yeah, you can't do that.
So you're trying to stock up.
That's not true. I go to the grocery every day. That, I think our problem is we go too much. I go too much. We go all the time.
You cut them down.
Somehow we always say, I don't know what to have. All right, what do you want me to get? I'll go get you. What do you want? And you know, we're at the. They all know us. Do they all know you at the grocery?
Like, oh, the bagels
I very
are
rarely yeah. go to the grocery store.
Look, the sucker that buys all our fruit.
Yeah.
I go out to eat all the time.
Yeah.
I don't need
anything.
Stuff in my fridge.
Yeah, he's going to Subway all the time.
Right. No, that's just, by far our biggest leak. I think it's food.
It gets on my last nerve. I'm upset right now thinking about it.
I can tell. You know what? You're stewing.
He's got a lot of last nerves, though.
Yeah. He's got a short fuse.
Yes. Well, I just don't like wasting money like that.
Yeah.
They're all though kind of kitchen related.
I mean, everyone wastes money.
Dustbuster in the kitchen.
Everyone wastes money. But on food, I mean, I just think that's.
You know what I want to do? This would be radical. But what I want to do, it's not in the same lines, but kind of in the same vein, is I want to have a company deliver a dumpster, and I want to just start throwing S away.
Oh, that people do that all the time.
I want to take like dressers and just throw them out the window.
Yeah,
just say here, take that thing, take this.
Oh,
thing.
My wife will take those.
Take all the clothes. No,
she'll redo the dressers.
The ones that you're using that have clothes
have
inside
junk.
Them.
They just have junk. Like you have some in the hallways.
Yeah,
just in the garage. Mm-hmm. There's just junk in there. Just get rid of it.
You can. I give you a guy.
You can definitely rent out those dumpsters because I've seen people in my neighborhood that big orange dumpster in the driveway.
Get them for
just
like
throw everything away.
$600 for 10 days.
Just throw it all away.
It's about an average.
Man, it would be amazing. Do that in my garage. Just get rid of everything.
Sure.
I mean, what I have like paint cans from 17 years ago.
Well, I mean, you can't throw those in a dumpster. You have to take those to the real dump. And actually drop them off in like the hazardous spot.
Okay,
it's got a special area.
Now, I guess you could throw it. You could, because nobody else is watching, but you could throw it technically in a dumpster.
Well, they watch over you sometimes at that Montgomery County recycling.
You think I don't know that?
Yeah.
I went there last week to throw away an old recliner. I did not chop it into a million pieces.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it had to go in the money metal pile because it has a bunch of metal pieces inside it. It's a recliner. It has springs. So I have it in the back of my vehicle. I drag it out. And I swear, this thing had not hit the ground for more than 3 seconds.
Right.
And a dude in an
What are you doing?
And an orange vest says, you can't put that here. I was like, it's got metal. He goes, I work here. I know. That's trash.
Yeah.
Stuff it back in. Stuff it back into the back of my vehicle. Then get in an interminable line. It was the longest line I've ever seen to go from the recycle area to the actual trash area.
There was
area.
Actually a line?
A line. It was Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, everybody's throwing everything away.
Oh,
I had to wait a 10-minute line.
I've never been in a line.
To get to the trash.
And you got
to
back in, and it's always tight there.
And I had to back it in. Right. I had to pull it out. I couldn't quite get it up off the ground because it was big and unwieldy. And the guy next to me is like, you need some help? I said, yes, I need help.
I think
pick it up, throw it away.
I go there
when
all the time.
Doubt, if you throw whatever you want in the trash,
yeah,
they're not going to give you a hard time.
For the most part, they're not.
Yeah, I mean,
but this guy definitely gave me a hard time. He said, "You can
well,
take that recliner."
Well, because you tried to get cute and put it in the metal.
I did try to get cute.
You got cute.
I did.
Put it in the metal. I think if you just go to the big dumpster,
yeah,
they don't care.
He was overthinking.
I overthought.
Instead
it.
Of taking the left turn to go to the trash, you continued straight to recycle.
Yep, straight.
And then when you come back,
yeah.
All that left turn traffic
mm-hmm.
made you wait.
I got boned. Mm. It happens sometimes.
Coming up next, we'll open up EB's entertainment page here on The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.